Life can be an extraordinary adventure. More than ordinary. In the gym. At home. At work. More than ordinary. Advice. Without the new agey bullshit.
Welcome to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne-Marie DeMars.
And so today we're tackling a topic that comes up a lot in conversations that I tend to have, especially with other startup people, and that is grants. Because people talk a lot about where do you get money and how do you fund your company. And for us, we've been very vocal about the fact that SBIR awards have been really good for us in building out our company. But I think people hear that and they think what you always say is, the government wants to give you free money. Like there used to be that infomercial or something like that. And I think we're here to dispel some of those myths.
Right. Every time I see that infomercial, it makes me want to do an Elvis Presley and shoot my TV. If you don't know, SBIR is the Small Business Innovation Research Grants. And we have recently gotten two more of those from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Shout out to them. Thank you, Agriculture, for funding research on rural youth development. We will make you proud.
But then when people hear from them, they say, oh, I'm going to do one of these. And it's not as easy as just sitting down and doing one of those, as it turns out.
It's kind of like someone said about writing a novel, that you just sit down at your word processor and open a vein. It feels like that some days.
Well, and I think one of the things that people don't get is just how intense they are. And I think the grants themselves tend to undersell how long it's going to take. I know there was one we did and it said projected time, 40 hours.
And I just said, are you fucking kidding me?
That's your free use swear word. But yeah, exactly. Even I thought that because, I mean, first of all, you know, for people that aren't familiar with them, what would you say if they said, so what do grants involve?
Well, generally you're looking at, depending on the size of the grant, somewhere between a 15 and 50 page written narrative, single spaced, on what exactly you're going to do, who's going to do it, what's the schedule going to be, when are you going to start, what is the research that backs up that this is necessary, what are your objectives, and after you get those 50 pages, then there's
9 million appendices. Appendices A through triple Z. Or at least that's the way it seemed. I think the last one there was A through J.
Maybe.
Is that correct?
So yeah, you think, oh, it's only 50 pages, but you don't realize there's another 100 pages of, for every year that you have a budget, write a budget narrative. And for every category, you know, if you say you're going to have 3 software developers, how many hours are each of them going to work? And how much is each of them going to get paid?
You need copies of people's CVs or resumes. One of the other things, too, is it's not just, you know, it's 15 to 50 page paper. It's literally like an academic journal article. So it is, you know, both a combination of here's what we're doing and then here's a ton of research. So we're talking about lit reviews and dozens of journal articles that you've read, some of them that you've read that don't even make it in there. So it's a lot of hours of your life that you're not getting back on that front as well.
Right. And this is not the Donald Trump school of research where several scientists have said so. You need to actually say that, you know, Cummings in 1997 wrote, and then you have to have in your bibliography, which is another appendix, the citation for the article that he wrote in 1997, and just repeat that 50 times over.
In whichever format they tend to want, APA or MLA or whichever alphabet soup of journal citation they've determined to be important of the day.
And the other thing is, before you even apply for a grant, so first of all, you have to do a literature review. They don't fund literature reviews in the vast majority of cases. So you have to go out and review all the literature on whatever the topics are that you're going to do the grant for. Then you have to have all the citations. Then you have to write it all up. Then you have to have all the CVs, like you said, and all the appendices. But before any of that, you have to be registered in all of these systems. So, for example, USDA uses grants.gov. Other agencies may have a different system. So you have to be registered in some computer system that even allows you to download the application and apply.
You have to have SAMS numbers and DUNS numbers and other various numbers for who knows what.
Yeah, DUN is, I think it's the Dun & Bradstreet Universal Numbering System. So if you don't have one of those, you need to get that. And that can take a couple of weeks. Now, you can pay extra money to get it expedited, but it's free if you just give yourself enough time. So, yeah, you need the DUNS number before you can get into SAM, and then you need to be in SAM before you can submit the grant through grants.gov. So you could see that you're backing up and up and up. Now, if you've done it a bunch of times, you have a leg up. because you have your DUNS number. You're registered in SAM. You're registered in grants.gov or whatever other thing it is that you need to be registered in.
Right. But, you know, and again, this idea that it's simple to do. So the fact is, too, so you've written 15 to 50 pages, and you're still probably less than half likely to get funded just based on the statistics. You know, the phase twos, 50% of phase two awards get funded. Phase ones, it's, you know, sometimes as low as, what, 7% to 15%?
Yeah, even less than that. So that's the other thing. When people say, oh, the phase two is 50, phase two, just so you know, I'm assuming you're interested in business if you're listening to this. The Small Business Innovation Research Awards are awarded by federal agencies that give federal research funds, and they give a small percent of those funds to small businesses. A phase one is a proof of concept or prototype. So as Maria said, between 7 to 15% of people, maybe less than 7 some years percent, get those. And then depending on the agency, it could be half of the phase twos get funded. But even then, it's half of the people who were the top 7%. So it's 3.5%.
And sometimes it's none.
Right. Some agencies, they don't have a set thing. They'll just say, well, none of these were good enough, and they don't fund anybody. When I look at a competition, one of the things I look at is to see what proportion of their grants get funded. I mean, I'm a statistician after all. So if over the last few years they've funded, say, 3%, I might go look for another competition to see if I might have somewhere where the odds are better.
You know, and one of the things I do point out to people, though, is it does take a lot of time. But one of the things that we determined early on is we were creating products in an area where people were not incredibly enthusiastic about investing. You know, we're developing games. They were games for, minority kids in low-income rural areas. Now, for somebody in Silicon Valley, that doesn't necessarily sound like a bunch of dollar signs, you know, or a bunch of money clinking together. So this enables us a way to do it. And one of the things when I talk to people is I say, it's not an easy way to do it, but if we took all of the time that we'd be spending going pitching daily, or, you know, chasing after people, you know, trying to get meetings, flying here, flying back, and we put that effort towards something that we think is going to have a higher return, then that's where it starts to make sense. So it's not easier, but it's just looking at your time resources and your likelihood of being successful in what arena and pursuing that.
And even once we expanded out beyond the reservations and beyond the remote communities and said, okay, we're going to make some apps now for everybody, for anybody who's concerned about their child doing better in math or learning English. Even then, a lot of the Silicon Valley bros, they don't have kids yet, right? So they're saying, no one cares about education, which to me is just shocking as a parent. And yes, so grants are an opportunity and a great idea for things to be funded that may do a lot for the social good and make money, just not the 10x return. And that's the important point too. When I talk to some people about funding, they'll say, it's not that we don't think you'll make money at this, but if I have $400 million and I put money into your, you know, I've got an extra $3 million to play around with, and I put money into your thing, I want to get back more than $3.3 million. I mean, 10%, an extra $300,000, that's a pretty good return. But if I have $400 million, that extra $300,000 isn't going to make any difference to me, so I want to get back $12 million. So grants are a great thing for something that is a good idea, that can be commercial, that maybe doesn't fall into that best case scenario, we could make $10 billion doing this. So I wouldn't discourage people completely from doing grants, but go in with your eyes open.
Hey, Jonah, you know what I love? Seven Generation Games.
I know, they're the best. I got them for all my nieces and nephews. They teach math and social studies. They love the games.
I wanted to get them for my niece in third grade, but she only has an iPad. I just wish they had an app.
But they do.
What?
Yes, Making Camp. It's the first app from Seven Generation Games, and it's out now in the Apple App Store.
So it will just be in the App Store?
Yes. All you'll have to do is search for Making Camp, or you can go to the 7 Generation Games site right now and enter your email to be notified as soon as the Android app is live.
Wow, that's awesome. And they will still sell the other games too, right?
Yep, you can still get Spirit Lake, Fish Lake, and Forgotten Trail just by going to 7generationgames.com/buy to get them today.
Hi, this is Piper Payne. I'm a mastering engineer, and you can find out more information about me at piperpayne.com. You are listening to More Than Ordinary.
Welcome back to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne-Marie DeMars.
And so we were talking about getting grant funding, and we think we're, I don't know if we would say we're experts on it, but we've gotten $1.35 million in grant funding for Seven Generation Games alone, and you've gotten, what, tens of millions of dollars in grant funding? So I think that makes you a pretty good expert.
And one of the things I want to bring up about that is, unless you want to find yourself in federal prison, keep in mind that when you get a grant, that is for a specific thing. So when I say I've brought in $30 million in grant funds, people say, oh, you must be really rich. No, that $30 million goes to, say, pay student scholarships, pay stipends to teachers over the summer to help put together curriculum, or all of the various things that grant funds are directed towards. So no, I'm not really rich. Still go to www.7generationgames.com/buy and buy our games.
So, but let's say you've said, okay, I've listened to it. I get it's a ton of work. Now what do I do? How do I get a grant funded? Or how do I even go about putting in a proposal? Because that's obviously the first step in getting it funded. So we have in our advice tips part of the podcast, several different pieces of advice/tips for all of you who are saying, okay, the grant thing is a lot of work. What do I have to do?
First thing, read the directions. Now, this might seem like the most obvious thing anybody ever says, but the directions are often over 100 pages long. So read every one of them. Know it better than God knows the Bible.
Yes. And not only are they 100 pages long, but they're not like 100 pages of reading Harry Potter, really fun and exciting long. They are 100 pages of what you would expect to be a government document long.
Right. Like according to CF 14.13, but the very first thing I do when I'm thinking about doing grant proposals, I sit down with the call for proposals from the previous year. Now, you might wonder why the previous year, because if I'm going to do a grant, I'm probably deciding 3 or 4 months ahead of time I'm going to do it, which means the call for proposals for that year isn't even out. So I'll find the call for proposals, I will go through it, I'll highlight everything that I think is relevant, and make a decision if I think maybe it fits our company and what we plan to do. My biggest piece of advice is find a proposal, a grant competition that fits what you do, rather than trying to write and make what you do fit the proposal, because people will see right through that. If it's from the Department of Agriculture, for example, they fund things for rural development. Don't say you're going to do it in Philadelphia because a lot of rural people move from Philadelphia, or whatever way you're thinking BSing. If it doesn't apply to you, move on.
And one of the really good stories that we have, I guess there's two of them, and both of them involve before the call for proposals opens. So before that month or so, what is it, usually a two-month period beforehand, where it says, here's what we're looking for, you can call people who run the grants program and talk to them about your specific idea. Now, once the program opens, they can't talk to you about anything other than here's when you need to submit it, or here's a portal to go through. They can't give you specific feedback on your project. But if you talk to them in that period before, you can say, hey, here's what we're looking at doing. Do you think this would be a fit? Do you want to, you know, and they won't say, they can't say, yes, we will definitely fund it. But they can say things like, we suggest that you apply to another agency. It was fun. I was at the Ed Games Expo that was done by IES, Department of Education. And their SBIR guy said, you know, how come you guys applied to USDA for your games? You know, because it didn't seem very typical. And I said, well, actually, you had a conversation with my co-founder when she talked to you about what we were doing. And you said, well, I'm not sure this would be a fit, but you should talk to the people at USDA. And we thought it was great advice. And he was like, well, I guess that was very good advice. You know, congratulations to me. But I think it's important to talk to people and then listen to what they say. So if somebody says, I don't think it's a fit for us, but, and sends you to someone else, then listen to them, because those are the people who have the best inside track on what's going on. And similarly, we had talked before amongst ourselves about, you know, the Department of Defense has, you know, they have obviously the largest budget. So they have the largest research budget, they have the largest SBIR program. And we had talked to them when we were at the SBIR meetings in D.C. a couple of years ago. And, you know, I met with the guy who, again, runs their program. And he said, well, you know, we don't really focus on these kind of things. But then we know not to go and apply for that.
Right. And I think that's a big mistake that people make, is you've gotten this person who's very busy, that heads up some funding program, to take their time and give you advice. And then, like an idiot, you try and argue with them and tell them about their program. If anything, I have found agency personnel to be overly optimistic, and this applies to private philanthropy as well as government grants. So they'll say, oh, yeah, sure, you apply. And I've heard them say that to people, where I'm thinking to myself, there is no way on God's earth you're going to get that funded. But if they tell you, we don't fund this sort of thing, don't try and argue with them about why they should fund it. Just say, thank you very much for your time, and can you suggest someplace I should apply? If they say no, it's a no.
Right. It's not like with investors where they say, you know, don't take no as their first answer. That's an opening to a conversation. No. No in this case means no, we're not interested. Please go away.
Right. But also, and I as Mari said, it is true that they can really be helpful in pointing you in the right direction. And I've had that happen several times. So they'd say, well, how about the National Science Foundation? How about the National Institute of Health? And there are still some places that we really are interested in applying and probably will eventually. But right now we're really kind of booked.
Well, and part of it also is finding the right people. So you put in this grant and it's not just yourself. You need to find the right partners. You need to find, especially for the research component, I mean, for a company, especially a software company like us, SBIR awards have been really good because they basically fund your R&D. You know, you build out your product and then you actually have the efficacy testing built in as part of this. But part of it is also then finding people who you can really rely on and who will be partners and committed into what you're doing. In our case, the schools that we've worked with, the staff on the reservations that have helped us build out these games. And I think it helps you pull together your team early on, but it's also really important that you have the right people in place because they'll see through that as well. And one other thing that you haven't brought up, but I will bring it up on your behalf because I know it drives crazy, is anybody that's going to write a grant for you is not going to do it on spec. Or if it gets funded, you know, I will, you know, you can't get someone to say, you write it for me, and if it gets funded, then I'll pay you out of it. I think one of the things people are always looking, especially people who are starting businesses, I seem to find people looking for the absolute cheapest way to do something. But at the end of the day, you're going to get what you pay for.
Very, very often, if someone will write something for you for free, they're not very good. Because the people who are good have no shortage of people who are willing to pay them cash on the barrel head to write for them. And we don't write any grants for people on contract anymore. I did that for a long time when you guys were all young and I needed the money. But we personally don't do it. There are a small number of places out there that will write a grant for you on spec, but they charge a lot of money. I mean, it'll be three times what you pay somebody who will do it for cash up front. And even those people, if they're good, they're either super expensive or not very good. So yeah, it's, and you know, I always get irritated by that too. Well, you write a grant for us, and if it gets funded, we'll pay you. Well, let's say you're working for this agency, this, you know, organization, whoever wants me to write it, you're getting paid, right? So yeah, I am in favor of getting paid for work I do.
This is Jonathan Little from Little Labs. You can find more information about us at littlelabs.com, and you're listening to More Than Ordinary.
Welcome back to More Than Ordinary, brought to you by 7GenerationGames.com, games that make you smarter. I'm Anne-Marie DeMars.
And I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And we have been talking about grants. So today, at the very moment, we're going to give you examples of things that get funded. So what kind of things could you get a grant to do? So the first one is Crossroads. It was funded by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Shout out to them. And we're doing it with Circle of Life on the Fort Berthold Reservation, where it was actually their idea. Speaking of where finding the right partners, which Maria likes to talk about, where the director there was saying to us, there's a huge problem with methamphetamine addiction, and they were familiar with our games that we make that teach math and history. And what happens in our games, if you haven't played them, too bad for you, there'll be a little scenario where you are meeting a hunter from another camp 6 days right away, and then what do you do? Where's the fairest place to meet? So he said, could you do something like that with games that kids could play on their phone, except instead of a math problem, it would be decision-making, like you find needles or drugs out in the yard. Now, normally you would go to your mom or to you know, an older brother. But what if mom's not home and it's the older brother who's the one doing the drugs? So there are a number of scenarios like that that they would like us to develop educational material for, that they would provide the scenarios and the things kids might do mistakenly and the right answer, and we would do the coding and the animation, art, and sound part of it. So I said, sure. And as Mary said, we talked to some folks in the Department of Agriculture and said, would this be something that would be considered appropriate for your competition? We spent a lot of time working with Fort Berthold putting it together, and now we've got the first couple of levels done, and we'll be doing a demo of it at the National Indian Education Association meeting in Reno next week.
And I think this is a perfect example of what you were talking about, of a game that on its own will not be a billion-dollar company. I think, you know, a game dealing with decision-making when it comes to substance abuse issues is incredibly important, but it's not something that's going to, you know, be this huge market spike. But this is in part what these awards go and help fund, is things like that that are necessary, are commercially viable, but just don't necessarily, will never be unicorns.
Well, and then I'm glad you brought that up, because the other example I have could well be a unicorn, and that's Aztec Games, which we just got a Phase 2 award that we were notified of in the last week. Yay! Thank you, U.S. Department of Agriculture, again. And a Phase 2 award is a larger award, and it goes for 2 years. And I do think Aztec, which is a game that will run on iPads, Chromebooks, Windows, desktop, basically almost anything that runs a browser, and it will be in Spanish and English. It teaches math, history, language. So it's going to be really super cool. We've already got a prototype of it done. But if you want, you know, an 18-month payoff, we've got 2 years of development to put into this game. And that's given the, oh, you know, almost a year that we've put in already. So in this case, this is something that could be a huge product, but it's not maybe fitting into the shorter window that investors would want. And so, and yeah, so those are two examples of things that would be fundable proposals, and we're super excited about it. It took a lot of work. We both of them had, as again, Maria said, you know, talks about the right partners with Crossroads. It's the Circle of Life staff, the Fort Berthold Reservation with Aztec. We're working with the School of Missouri. We're working with this, some rural schools in both North Dakota and California. So getting all that together can pay off in a big way, not just for your company, but for making great stuff.
And for people who maybe aren't getting lots of great stuff made for them.
So that's us, 7 Generation Games, games that make you smarter. Go to 7generationgames.com/buy. And if you have no money, we got you covered too, because the Making Camp on the App Store.
And we expect all of you people who said, oh, if only you have an app, I would get it. Oh, if it's free, I would get it. Well, you know what? Now we've got you covered. So we expect to see those numbers spike.
All righty.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Ordinary podcast.
For more information, please go to our website, 7generationgames.com. And that's 7 as in the number 7, generationgames.com.
If you'd like to learn more about math and history, or increase your vocabulary while at the same time having fun, you can purchase our games at 7generationgames.com/buy.
You can also donate and help a much-deserving student.
And as always, please tell a friend and don't forget to rate us on iTunes.
It's never too late to be more than ordinary.